I'm Bridie Cruz. Today on Undivided, Democrats in Olympia have agreed to hold hearings on 3 of 6 Let's Go Washington initiatives, but they are still taking the easy way out. Plus, lies continue to pile up as the debate heats up on repealing Inslee's Climate Commitment Act, and pro-Palestine demonstrations continue completely unhindered. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Bridie Cruz. I just saw in the live chat, D-Man in Seattle says pre-recorded maybe. No, not pre-recorded. It's President's Day, but I feel like it would be sacrilege if we didn't do our political show on President's Day. So here we are. We've got a lot to cover. A lot happens during the legislative session so quickly. You know, we don't have a live show on Fridays, and so there's a lot of scramble and a lot of stuff goes on Fridays, and then we always need to make sure we bring you full speed on Mondays. So we have a lot to get to. But, you know, feel free, since it's President's Day, to drop your favorite president in the comments and tell us why, because we are going to talk later about the rankings that presidential historians put out about who the best president are and who the worst presidents are. Hint, Trump is not at the top of the list. I know that will come as a surprise to a lot of you. All right, I want to talk about what's happening with the initiatives. There has been some movement on them. And by movement, I mean Democrats are sly dogs. I mean, they really are smart. When you look at the Democratic majority in Olympia, the way that they choose to frame the initiatives, the lies that they tell about the initiatives, they know what they're doing. They're in the majority for a reason. And so while I am happy to hear that they are going to give hearings to 3 of the 6 Let's Go Washington initiatives, make no mistake, they are very crafty in the ones that they have chosen to hold hearings on, and more specifically, the ones they have chosen not to hold hearings on. So these 3 Let's Go Washington initiatives are going to get hearings. I-2111, which would say no state income tax, I-2113, restoring reasonable police pursuits, and I-2081, which has to do with parental notifications. Those are going to get hearings in the coming days. We will, of course, have much more on that if you'd like to sign in, pro-con, to try to testify, where you can watch them and when, all of that. But, you know, these are of the 3. I think Democrats were in a tough spot where they were going to have to hold hearings on some of these. Historically speaking, it would be insane for them not to. We had to go back 20 years to find an instance of an initiative to the legislature not being given a hearing. And so for them to, if they had ignored all 6 of them, it would have been purely political. And so I had a strong inclination they'd give hearings to a few of them. You know, we had a rally in Olympia calling on them to do so, given that more than 800,000 voters signed their names to at least one of these. So they choose these 3. Here's why I think this is smart. We'll get into the ones that they're not going to hold hearings on. You know, when it comes to the initiative to solidify no state income tax, there is already, constitutionally speaking, in the state constitution, a state income tax that is graduated is prohibited. But we've seen these sneaky, sly efforts for them to try to test that and try to get something through, and that's what this initiative is about. And so really what Democrats are going to do when they hold the hearings is say, oh, well, we can't have this kind of state income tax anyway, so this is really a nothing burger. On parental notification, the parental notification initiative doesn't per se repeal any existing law. It sort of puts a flag in the ground saying parents are the primary stakeholders in their kids' lives. And as Olympia moves on to craft policy that has, as we know, gone in the direction of eroding parental rights, Initiative 2081 will become more and more important. But it doesn't repeal something where there's a lot of money coming in attached to it, et cetera. So there's not a lot of risk involved, I don't think, about them holding a hearing on that. And then restoring reasonable police pursuits, there's already a lot of bipartisan support for doing that in Olympia. There's a bill this session to restore reasonable police pursuits closer to how they were before Democrats went off the deep end after 2020. And so again, because there's some Democratic support to do that, it's not a high-risk hearing for them to hold. Now, the other 3 initiatives would be very high-risk hearings for them to hold, and that's why they're not doing it. So the 3 initiatives that they have said, we are not going to hold hearings on, we're just going to let this go to voters, are Initiative 2117, which would repeal the Climate Commitment Act, And stop this gouging at the gas pump that we're seeing in the name of climate change. Initiative 2109 would repeal the tax on capital gains, and Initiative 2124 would allow citizens to opt out of the state-run long-term care program. So why not hold hearings on these three initiatives? Because after all, holding a hearing doesn't mean that you have to sign it into law. There are a lot of times historically where the legislature has held hearings on initiatives to the legislature and then they didn't sign them into law. They didn't pass them. So what would be the downside? Well, all three of these specifically have a lot of money tied into them. The other ones don't, but these ones reflect billions of dollars in new revenue that the state has started to collect over the last couple of years. So it's not a surprise that they don't want to touch these things with a 100-foot pole. But why I think they're not willing to at least have hearings on these initiatives is they cannot defend their lies on the record. They cannot defend the shortcomings of these taxes on the record. They're not willing to do that. And we're going to get into some of the lies that they've been told. But here is Senator Andy Billig, who's the Senate Majority Leader, talking specifically about why they're not going to hold hearings on repealing cap gains and repealing the CCA.
Capital gains tax and the Climate Commitment Act, I think we can definitively say we're not going to have hearings on these two initiatives that roll back progress and really would harm our state. The capital gains initiative, if it passed, would devastate our funding for child care. We have a child care crisis. We have bipartisan support because it is so important on so many levels. It's important for parents to be able to go to work. It's important for businesses. And most importantly, it's important for those kids to get the improvement and the start in their lives in a way that is so evidence-based, will help them through their entire life if it's high quality child care. So that's one. We just simply cannot do a $5 billion cut to that. And then the Climate Commitment Act, which I know others will want to talk about, but that's, we're not, you know, our state is not, and the legislature is not going to take us backward on a policy that invests in our state, protects clean water and clean air, and protects our planet. And it's a leadership position for Washington State in our country, in our world, and it would be a huge mistake to go in reverse. So we're not doing that.
But here's the thing. Why can't you make those arguments at a hearing? Again, the hearing doesn't mean that you have to pass the thing. Nobody is expecting you to repeal some of your proudest accomplishments. But if you believe everything you said, and if those are the strongest arguments for not repealing the Climate Commitment Act, for not repealing the tax on capital gains, for not, you know, making the long-term care tax optional, then you should be more than happy. You should be excited to hold a hearing and to vet all of that out in the public realm and to have people come in and testify for and against. And then you can challenge the people who are against it. But again, that's not why they're not holding a hearing. They're not holding a hearing because there have been so many lies told about those three initiatives that to have those lies play out in a formal hearing would not be good for Democrats. And it would also undercut some of the narratives that they are going to rely on to get voters to reject those initiatives in November. I mean, you know, Governor Inslee has continued to say that the CCA isn't increasing gas prices, which is just a demonstrable lie. His own staff has said that that policy is designed to increase gas prices. Imagine that conversation playing out in hearing. What are Democrats going to do? They're going to be challenged on that. They're going to be challenged on it in a hearing, and they can't commit to Inslee's egregious lie on that on the record for something that's so deeply unpopular, like increased gas prices. And then you look at some of the other things that have been said about this. Monica Dingra, we played this clip where she's talking about these initiatives will, take our state back so many years.
The state of Washington is at risk with these initiatives, and we will be taken backwards by decades on the great policy that we have actually made such great improvements on.
Yeah, Democrats can't say that in a hearing. Democrats can't in a hearing say that any of these initiatives will take our state back decades because they reflect revenue that the state just started collecting in over the last year or two. I mean, heck, long-term care, they just started taking money from paychecks in July. The Climate Commitment Act, the carbon trading auctions just began at the beginning of 2023. It's only been just over a year. They just started collecting capital gains revenue in the spring of last year. It hasn't even been a year. So they can't continue to spread lies like that in a hearing. Most certainly not. And then I think the granddaddy of all the lies that they're going to peddle out there from now until November is something that multiple Democrats have stated, not in an official hearing, not on the floor. Emily Randall is one of them, where she talks about, man, this is just about one rich guy, Brian Haywood, trying to get out of paying taxes.
I think it's really important to look at this effort to, you know, by the initiatives to buy an election by one person, at an effort to pull us back into, you know, holes that we saw in the last recession that we've only just started to dig ourselves out of and invest in communities.
Yeah, you say that at any of these hearings, you give any of those three initiatives a hearing, that falls apart like this. Because you're going to have regular people who sign up to testify and talk about the impact the CCA is having on their lives and on their ability to feed their families, to get to and from work. You're going to have regular working class Washingtonians who talk about the negative impact of money being taken out of their paycheck for the long-term care program that they didn't even want and they're not going to use because they're going to retire out of state. And with capital gains, you're going to have expert witnesses who testify and point out all the times already that Democrats have tried to reduce the threshold for who should have to pay a tax on capital gains. And they're going to show through that that this initiative is necessary because it's not just going to be about the richest of the rich people having to pay through their teeth. It's going to be about all of us. And eventually, anyone who sells a house in Washington state, they're going to want to pay a tax on capital gains for the proceeds from the sale of your home. So they cannot give these initiatives hearings because their lies will not withstand scrutiny under a hearing. So they're taking the easy way out. Great, I'm glad they're giving a hearing to three of those things, these initiatives. But they're giving hearings to the ones that are the least likely to cost them sort of political points. So I hope they're not going to change their mind. I hope maybe there's enough pressure for them to change their mind on these other things. So now it's important, and it's important for the media, although I don't have a lot of hope that, given what I've seen so far, that the media is going to do its job and vet the lies that have been told about these initiatives. But we're certainly going to do our best. It's important for citizens to hold lawmakers accountable from now until November on all the lies that they're telling about these initiatives. Like, let people vote. Let people make up their minds. And let's give them the facts that they need to do that. Go ahead. Go out there and talk about what you're spending the billions of dollars on that is coming in through the CCA and just say, hey, we think that the struggles that you're having to pay for gas are worth it because look at all these great things we're doing. Let's give people the truth. Let's let them decide what revenue is worth it and which is not and what revenue is not worth it. And meanwhile, I mean, you know, they won't tell lies in hearings, or they don't want to have to tell lies in hearings that can be in the moment, fact-checked, but they're willing to tell lies, as you saw there, during press conferences that they hold, media availabilities, and they're sure as hell going to be willing to tell lies in TV ads, in political ads about these things from now until November. They're sure as hell going to be willing to tell lies in political mailers that special interest groups are going to be spending millions of dollars on through now until November, and it turns out they're very willing to tell lies, blatant, easily provable lies on their government social media pages. I'm going to share an example of that coming up next. First, it is time to become a member of the First Mark family. If you have not become a member already, Mike and I are a member of the First Mark family. We took the First Mark challenge about a year ago, and we're so glad we did. We were way underinsured as a household. So we went to First Mark. We talked to them about our insurance needs. They went out. They shopped the market for us, all the carriers that they have at their disposal. They came back. They got us better insurance for the same price. And I've heard from so many of you who obviously appreciate the ability to have a company that can help you save money on something that you already need. But man, it's such a time suck to shop the insurance industry on your own and navigate it on your own. And Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, says that's a big thing that they do, is they take that completely off your hands and you never pay them a dime.
You want to know you're getting a competitive price. How else do you do that unless you're willing to yourself shop 10 different insurance companies to find out.
Right.
Right. Do you trust your agent at one of these captive carriers? So get a competitive price. And the best way to do that is have a broker, again, like Firstmark, shop the market for you.
Yeah, and you might be able to get a competitive price by going to one of these big box carriers and doing their little fancy things where you name the price that you want, or you tell them what you need and they come back and they compare all these big box carriers. That might give you the price you need, but it might not give you the coverage that you need, and it might give you coverage you don't need. So honestly, let Firstmark Insurance handle all of it for you. You never pay them for any of this. You learn a lot in the process. You can save money in the process. And sometimes they'll come back to you and say, actually, we can't save you any money and the insurance you have is great. And they'll just tell you to be on your way. FirstmarkInsurance.com. Take the Firstmark Challenge. The very best part is they work for you. State Senator Marco Elias, on an absolute bender over the weekend, spewing lies on his government social media account about what would happen if voters repeal the Climate Commitment Act in November. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So, Senator Marco Elias on Twitter, where he lies a lot. I mean, we've talked about some of his just weird blatant lies about things on social media, and I honestly think there should be a rule against this. I don't think you should be able to, as a politician, you know, you've got your personal account, and then you've got your government social media accounts, which are separate. I don't believe you should be able to tell lies on your government social media account. I just don't know why that's allowed. And these are really odd ones because, again, if you believe that the Climate Commitment Act is the right policy for the right time in Washington state, then own it. Then make those arguments. Talk about the investments that are being made and how it'll help the environment, et cetera. But don't lie to us about it. And don't lie to us about it on your official social media pages. So Marco Elias sends out two back-to-back tweets. And this is a preview of the lies that we're going to continue to hear about this initiative heading to November. The first one, he said, I-2117 would repeal the Climate Commitment Act, stripping $4.5 billion in funding from transportation projects across Washington. That devastation would force difficult choices, potentially risking our ability to fund critical bridge maintenance. And I'm thinking, what? CCA money is being spent on critical bridge maintenance? And then he follows that up with this one. I-2117 would repeal the Climate Commitment Act, stripping $4.5 billion for transportation funding projects across Washington. That devastation would force difficult choices and potentially put at risk funding for critical work on the preservation and maintenance of roads in every community. Here I'm thinking gas tax money goes to the preservation of roads. So I was very confused when I saw this because, one, you're talking about CCA money and billions of dollars from a Climate Commitment Act fund that you're saying would mean we can't, if it's taken away, we can't repair bridges and roads. I thought that this was about putting that money towards stuff that was helping the environment, not funding basic maintenance on bridges and roads. We already have revenue streams that do that. So what in the world are you talking about? So at first glance, I knew that that just wasn't true, but I gotta love Representative Drew Stokesbury. He's a Republican, but before he became the Republican leader in the House, he was like the budget guy on the Republican side. And I've had him on the show a lot to talk about budget issues because he's just very sharp on it. And he called out Senator Elias for just flat out lying, and he provided the receipts. He provided the whole breakdown of the 2023-2025 transportation budget Climate Commitment Act spending. So specifically, all of the line items for any CCA money that's going to anything transportation related. And he said, Senator, not a dime of CCA revenue goes to maintenance and preservation of our highways. Defunding that work would be a devastating choice, costing thousands of union jobs in our districts and longer commute times for our constituents. He's essentially saying we wouldn't do that. And the data shows, the line-by-line analysis shows that none of it, not one dime of CCA money, goes to what Marco Elias said in his tweets would be at risk if you repeal the CCA. To which Senator Elias responds, defunding our transportation system would be a devastating choice. Just keeps reaffirming that. He said to Drew Stokesbury, cutting $5 billion from transportation will mean cuts to everything. And that, so what he's saying basically is if you take away this $5 billion they've allotted from the Climate Commitment Act money to transportation projects, that we would somehow have to strip money from transportation projects that money isn't allotted to, which obviously makes no sense. And that's just not how this kind of funding works. So he's, and to name a couple of the things that are transportation related but aren't critical transportation funding that CCA money does go to: green transit grants, pedestrian and bicycle safety grants, electrifying our ferry fleet. So the CCA money that's dedicated to transportation related projects is climate related transportation projects. I mean, this is pork. These are pet projects. These are things that Democrats want, that they're happy they have, you know, helping students get free bus rides, etc. But these are not, by a long shot, even close, these are not critical transportation funding issues. This is not money to make sure our bridges don't fall down. This is not money to make sure that our highways are in good repair. That's what he wants you to believe, but that's just not true. And when you look at the line item, it's a very easy lie to disprove. So what he's saying is essentially that they want to keep all these programs that the CCA has helped them fund. So we're going to keep it all. We want to do all these things. So if you take away the CCA money, what? You're going to take money, existing revenue that's meant to maintain bridges and roads, and you're going to put it toward green transit grants instead? You're going to put it toward pedestrian and bicycle safety grants instead? That would be on you, Senator, if you decide to take critical funding for the very basics of maintaining our transportation system and put it into your climate pet projects because voters decide to repeal the CCA. That would be a choice that you make. So these are just demonstrable lies. And on top of all of that, like, let's just say that the CCA was funding transportation, like road repairs and bridges. I thought the CCA was about helping the environment. So even if Marco Elias were telling the truth, which he's not, I thought the CCA was specifically about helping the environment, not like give us money for basic stuff. And that's what Inslee says. He says the CCA money is critical because there are people in our communities dying early because of pollution. So both things can't be true. I mean, either this is about dedicating money toward climate projects, which the governor has said, and which the line items show that money is going toward climate-related projects, or it's going toward funding basic government needs, which we know is not true. So the lies on this have just been insane. It's important that you're ready to see through those lies, to do the research on your own, to find media outlets that are going to help give you the context that you need to understand what's happening, because this will be a really crazy 9 months in terms of trying to sort through what's true and what's false. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, another Seattle teacher, shock of the century, identified at a pro-Hamas protest. So there was, again, because nothing's happened to these people. I mean, there have been cases referred for the I-5 shutdown to the prosecutor's office. We don't know what's going to happen with those cases. But, you know, politicians don't care that the pro-Palestine Hamas sympathizers are out blocking bridges and freeways and roadways, and they were in downtown Seattle over the weekend, which we'll talk about in a moment. But it does not cease to amaze me how many Seattle public school teachers were among the protesters who blocked I-5. Ari Hoffman sent out a tweet. They've been good at identifying individuals. I love it. Ari's out there. Our friend Jonathan Cho is out there. And they've just been sending out screenshots of protesters and asking people to help identify them. Ari says, an eagle-eyed listener identified Deborah Maria Gans, a public school teacher, in one of the photos released by the Washington State Patrol of the pro-Hamas activists who blocked I-5 last month. So again, I know the State Patrol is still looking into who they can refer charges on. If you can identify any individual in that crowd, there's no reason not to charge them. there's no reason to pick and choose who you charge. They were all out there committing a crime. So if you can identify them, I would hope that the next case referred to the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office is a case against Deborah Ganz. And I would also hope that the Seattle Public School District really asks itself why they have so many teachers who are breaking the law, why they have so many teachers who are caught on camera, proudly committing acts of vandalism, and why they're not doing anything about it. Man, if I had a child in the Seattle Public School District, I'd sure want to ask the district whether those were good examples for my children and whether those teachers were a good influence on my children. So meanwhile, there were other protests this weekend that happened in downtown Seattle where they blocked roadways because, again, their wants and their needs are more important than anyone else's. So whether they're going to block a bridge or a highway or block people who are trying to get around in downtown Seattle, they have been taught throughout the last 20 years that they can do that because their wants and needs are more important than anything anyone else has going on. And they have been taught by our city leaders that they can get away with it. There's not going to be condemnation. There's not going to be consequences. You can disrupt a Christmas tree lighting. You can blockade I-5. You can stand in the middle of traffic in downtown Seattle for as long as you want. We're not going to do anything about it because it's not politically popular for us to do something about it. Jason Rant sent out a few pictures of again, the protest in downtown Seattle and how they were just going all over the place, blocking whatever streets they wanted to block. He said, Seattle gave the streets to the anti-Semites again. Zero leadership, just acquiescence to those cosplaying Nazis. And this is not some sort of peaceful pacifist crowd. You know, as an American who believes firmly in the protections of our Constitution, inherently, I can't say I have an issue with modest disruptions caused by protests. I think that sometimes in history there are going to be issues that are so important, issues that are so overwhelmingly in the interest of the public, like government overreach issues, where some modest disruption to business as usual might be fine. Now, I don't believe that this pro-Palestine cause is one of them, but who am I to pick and choose? So let's just say that I'm okay, generally speaking, with like a little modest disruption to business as usual, and I'm not going to pick and choose. But that wasn't what this is. You have these people out there who say that they're there to protest violence, you know, protest violence against Palestinians, but are also, in some instances, engaging in random acts of violence. Our friend Jonathan Cho was once again assaulted while down there covering these demonstrations. Here's a clip. Guy just comes up to him randomly. I mean, they know who he is, right? And attacks him. And Jonathan thankfully got his face on video. So I would hope that somebody's able to identify this person. But again, tell me how your pacifists... You can take it down. Is there more to it? Tell me how your pacifists... You're out there protesting against violence, and you're committing acts of violence. So here's, I think, an interesting test. I've heard there's a Trump rally scheduled for like Friday or Saturday this week in downtown Seattle. Pro-Trump rally. I've said, man, if these were right-wingers who'd blocked the highway, if they were right-wingers who were taking over bridges or shutting down tree lightings, do you think in any universe the response would be similar? Absolutely not. The response from politicians, the response from the media would still be losing their minds and urging. I mean, the media would be advocating for the arrest of right-wingers had they blocked the freeway. Inslee would have held a press conference with Bob Ferguson immediately within minutes. Bruce Harrell would have done the same thing over the weekend. Proud Boys.
Proud Boys, okay.
Immediately. If there was Proud Boys taking over the streets of the interstate, Bruce Harrell would be out with a press conference immediately. But it's these crazy left-wingers and nothing. It's absolute silence. So I am very curious now to see, one, how are politicians going to respond if there is a Trump rally that manifests this weekend in Seattle? What are their responses are going to be? What the response of the police department is going to be? And how the media covers it? Because the media has basically been like, no big deal. for anti-Semites and people who disrupt everyone's lives. So if it's right wing, is it going to be different? I think that'll be a great test. And by the way, if right wingers are doing exactly what left wingers are doing, and I've condemned it on the left, I'm going to condemn it on the right. It's one of the reasons I've been so forceful about January 6th. Had that been BLM rioters who did the exact same stuff, you think for one second anyone would have downplayed it? No. Now, I happen to think that the government wouldn't have pursued as relentlessly charges against BLM rioters had they done that, but I digress. And so it's about moral consistency, and it's not about the message, it's about the actions that you're engaged in. And if some right-winger is vandalizing some business, I'm going to have just as big of a problem with it, obviously, as I did when the left-wing crazy teacher was up vandalizing Starbucks. So our friend Jonathan Cho, justice for Jonathan Cho. I was sending out a screenshot of that guy, like, someone knows who this is.
I think he said it got so bad he left.
Yeah, he said he had to ditch because once they identify him, and I've, you know, been through that too, like, once they've picked you out, and they're not going to leave you alone. And so it becomes to the point where you're actually of no use, you know, and that's kind of where I was at Fox after our crew got mobbed at CHOP is like, okay, I'm not going to be able to point a camera in any direction, do any live hits or anything down here, so I'm of no use. You might as well replace me with someone who they don't know or hate. And so it's difficult, and it is, you know, violating his rights to be down there covering something. So I hope that they can find and identify and arrest the person who assaulted Jonathan Cho, but not a lot of hope. If it's a Proud Boy who assaulted a member of the media, do you think for one second the rest of the media wouldn't be like, find this guy? Put him in jail. Oh, the hypocrisy some days. All right, I wanted to play a quick clip of our Sundays with Subscribers interview this week because it's in line with a topic we've talked about on the show an awful lot. You know, the whole, and it's around the CCA, all the lies we were just telling about the CCA and Governor Inslee, you know, won't acknowledge that it increased gas prices and Marco Elias is out here just spewing lies left and right. It's like the climate is an important issue. The environment is an important issue. And it shouldn't be divisive. We should be able to talk about it with data and facts and reason. But for some reason, it's like this whole climate agenda and the climate industrial complex, it's immune from data and science, which this is an issue that should be so firmly rooted in data and science. So we had Cliff Mass on the show on Sunday, and he's a professor of atmospheric science at the University of Washington, and he's somehow been painted as this extreme right-wing sort of climate figure. When he's not like, he's not a climate change denier. He just wants us to use data and science when we talk about these issues. And specifically, we discussed a Seattle Times story. So the Seattle Times had started something called the Climate Lab, which is funded by outside interests, specifically so the Times can have this focus on covering climate issues. And they published this article, the headline, Washington's Snowpack Languishes with Little Hope for the Months Ahead. And the thesis of it was basically that if you look up at the mountains and there's no snow, climate change. That is the thesis of this entire Seattle Times article. So Cliff Mass comes on Sundays with Subscribers and he's telling us how he saw that article. And he's like, that's just not true. And he tried to get the Seattle Times to correct it. Here's a clip. You released a blog which kind of demolishes point by point some of the things that they're saying. But just generally, if we look at the thesis of that article, do you agree with it or not?
I don't. In fact, let me point out that I've written papers on exactly this subject in the peer-reviewed literature, okay? So I know what I'm talking about this particular subject. And one thing is clear, and that is there's been extremely little change in the snowpack during the last 30, 40 years. I can prove this with data. And this is exactly the period where global warming has been supposedly the strongest, right, during the last several decades. So it doesn't work. The numbers don't match these claims that's what's happening is due to climate change. Now, we all did expect this to be a bad snowpack year. Why? Because it's a strong El Nino year. This is one of the strongest El Nino years during the past 50 years. El Nino years tend to produce less snowpack in the Cascades. There's a deep literature on this. And the fact that wasn't stressed in this article shows, you know, profound bias.
You think it shows bias or incompetence? I mean, is it just a lack of understanding the issue, or do you believe it is bias-driven?
I think it's bias driven, but you know, it could, some incompetence could be spread in there too, if you'd like. But I think this is a bias, and particularly I can tell you that because I've left comments on the Seattle Times comment page saying this is why it's wrong. There's no response. Then I sent a message directly to the person who wrote the article, and I said this is wrong. This is why it's wrong. And they came back saying, that I'm wrong, right? I gave them the information. So, anyway.
Yeah, your blog was very point for point. So you shared the information, the data, the graphs about snowpack, et cetera, talking about El Nino. And so have they, since you put this out and the information in very black and white, have they taken any of that information or otherwise corrected their article to reflect any of that information?
Absolutely not. And they're completely uninterested in talking about the facts.
Yeah.
I say, these are the facts. What you said is wrong. This is exactly why it's wrong. What do you have to say? They don't say anything.
Yeah.
So even when presented with the scientific facts that are in the peer-reviewed literature, they won't even think about it. What happened to investigative journalism, right? They're trying to get the facts right. It's not there. This is pure and simple advocacy work. I mean, that's all it is, really.
Yeah, and that full conversation with Cliff Mass is up right now for subscribers, undividedpod.com. You can support the show for $5 a month. We always have these great, in-depth, interesting interviews on the show on Sundays. And Cliff Mass is right, and I think hearing from him, you know, there's no dripping ideology there. This is someone whose whole career has been about studying these issues. He cares about these issues. We even talk about, you know, what we need to do to prevent down the road, you know, the snowpack from suffering if there are climate-related issues. But to have him so articulately and in his blog and on our show lay out and show the data as to why the Seattle Times entire article and the thesis of it is just flat wrong, and have provided that information to the Seattle Times that's doing this under the umbrella of something called the Climate Lab, and have them just outright ignore clear factual inaccuracies, what are you getting? How are we supposed to have reasonable fact-based conversations about climate issues when the newspaper of record doesn't care if they're fact-based, when they won't listen to an expert professor on this issue who's giving them the data they need to get the story right? Where do we go from there? And we wonder why Jay Inslee is so willing to lie with ease about the Climate Commitment Act. We wonder why Senator Marco Lea, Senator Emily Randall, Senator Manka Dhingra are so willing to lie with ease about what would happen if we repealed the CCA. Because they know they've got the Seattle Times over there who has a climate section, and they don't care about getting it right. So they're able to lie. They know that. That's why they do it. So it was an interesting interview. God bless Cliff Mass for hanging in there and continuing to push back against this ridiculousness. It is not too much to ask for news articles and news agencies to get things right, whether it's on the climate or anything else. And I've said for a long time that the judge of a good journalist is, are they willing to correct their errors? If they're hesitant to correct their errors, that's not journalism. I've had to correct errors on this show, and we don't even do journalism. I mean, we do some stuff that could be considered journalistic, but this is first and foremost an opinion show. But if I base my opinion off of something that I got factually wrong, we've corrected it in the past. It's because if people can't trust you, then what good are you in the media sphere? And, you know, this other conversation, Nicole and I kind of elaborated about it on the Sunday show, the Climate Lab with the Times, it's similar to like their Project Homelessness, which is funded by outside kind of rich people and organizations that have an interest in having more coverage of homeless issues, and the same with the Climate Lab. Now, Cliff is very opposed to that. I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I mean, we're partners with Future 42, which is a politically aligned organization. I happen to agree with them, which is why I'm an ambassador for them. But we do a sponsored segment for them every Monday. And I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt that they don't have editorial control over that segment. And so as long as the Seattle Times can actually truthfully not have those funding sources influence their reporting, then I'm fine with that. I mean, the media has to get creative these days about how it stays afloat. But the question is, if they've got this outside funding, there's clear factual inaccuracies in their story, and they're not willing to correct them, can they say that editorial speaking, those outside funding sources are not influencing their reporting? I don't think that they can. And this is a very, very important conversation to have. So I appreciate it, Cliff Mass, talking to us on Sundays with subscribers. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, Dow Constantine says, oh, maybe we can't close the youth jail as soon as I thought we could, but we're still going to do it. We'll discuss. First, I've been talking to our friend Wes Jones about the state of the real estate market. 2023 was not great in the real estate market. Let's just be honest. Interest rates are so high. You just had people who were not willing to sell their homes, so there weren't a lot of homes on the market. And if you could wait to buy a home, you were going to wait to buy a home. So now is the question about, okay, what's the Fed going to do this year? It's an election year. They didn't drop interest rates a few weeks ago, but there's still hope that they'll drop interest rates a few times in 2024. And Wes says, if not for any other reason, then presidential election year, maybe you want Americans to feel good about the state of things.
They say that the Fed and the presidency, you know, they're not supposed to influence each other. But let's be honest, come on, they're not supposed to.
Right.
But they do. So, you know, Biden's administration is going to do whatever they can to put whatever pressure they can, you know, on the Fed to keep lowering interest rates down, because that's what it's going to make the American population happy and allow people to get into ownership, or at least give them, you know, give them that peace of mind.
Yeah. So if you are thinking about selling your home and you're kind of waiting too, because you know that if interest rates go down and you put your home on the market, you're going to have much more people flooding in to buy it with the interest rates lower. The best thing you can do is get your home ready now. You don't want to wait, because you want to take advantage of that influx day one. So go to sellwithwes.com, and talk to Wes Jones and his team about what they have to offer. They have something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where they can help get your home ready to hit the market. They can even help you with repairs to your home, cosmetic updates. They can pay for it up front. They've got a lot of unique things and just killer marketing for home sellers. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Dow Constantine saying perhaps the most obvious thing in the world that, you know, King County's not exactly in the best spot to close their youth detention facility quite yet. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so you might recall back during the, oh, no youth detention movement, and oh, let's light the construction trailers on fire over at the building of the new youth detention center in 2020, that Dow Constantine, because they don't do things based on whether they should be done. They do things based on who's yelling at us the loudest on any given day. And so Dow gave in to the no youth detention crowd in this feeling, this nice, sentimental, warm feeling that, oh, juveniles should not be in a jail. They should just be getting coddled, when we all know, and we're like, juveniles, some juveniles are very violent. There's some young people committing some very adult crimes. Where do you plan to put them? So we all knew that this was ridiculous. And we knew that if he followed through with closing the youth jail, it was going to be incredibly detrimental to public safety. And now we're in this period of time where we have all these horrible crimes being committed by young people, which we have to get a grasp on. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. We really need to do more coverage about what are the solutions here? What is going on with these young people who are committing just atrocious acts? But anyway, so now we are 2024, and Dow Constantine tells Chris Daniels with Como News, oh, well, I guess we're not quite ready to shut down the youth jail, as I had predicted.
A dramatic rise in violent juvenile crime.
Do you still believe closing the youth jail is a good idea?
Yes.
How can you say that the jail should be closed given this increase in juvenile crime?
Nobody is saying that there's not a need for detention. The question is, what does that detention look like?
King County Executive Dow Constantine had previously said he wanted to close the new $242 million taxpayer-financed youth jail in Seattle's Central District by 2025.
Racist jails have got to go!
After protests and a backlash in 2020.
Wouldn't it be a waste of money for the county if that was to close?
It is actually a good example of the kind of approach we want to take with other parts of the juvenile population, where we really take on their underlying challenges.
Do you think community passageways and organizations like them are actually working?
They are working, but they're still in development.
So they're working, but they're still in development. If they're still in development, then they can't be working. And we haven't seen, if you have a program that you're going to sit here and tell Chris Daniels is working, yet we see out on the streets the amount of juvenile crime happening, that's a program you should stop right now. Because there is no program you have right now that is currently working. So to suggest that we're anywhere close to on our way to being able to end youth detention, as you said was your goal by now, which clearly it has gotten worse, you're a failure as a leader. You're completely detached from reality, and you're more concerned with pleasing activists than keeping the community safe, making sure that people, regardless of age, are held accountable for acts of violence. And you clearly have no coherent plan to try to address the root causes of these issues. And you've been in office, this is your fourth term. So you're going to be going on 16 years. I think it's 16. Is he in his fourth or third? I think he's in his fourth. 16 years as the King County executive. And look what you've done to King County. It's shameful. But then, you know, again, we have all of these acts of violence. And this goes hand in hand, I think, with this larger issue of these juvie detention facilities. You know, we've talked about the issues at Green Hill School, for instance. They want to continue to treat violent teenagers like they have to be coddled and like they shouldn't be in a secure setting the same way that an adult criminal is, who might have done the exact same crime, who happens to be just a few years older. You know, and these criminals are getting younger and younger. Did you guys see this story? King County just charged these brothers, 12 and 13. 12, 12, and 13 years old for this violent, crazy carjacking slash chase situation. So they stole a car from a woman at gunpoint. They had just tried to steal a car from a guy and they were firing shots into the air. They said that they had to steal the woman's car because that one of their moms kicked them out of the house. Like crazy stuff. And they go on this wild chase with the Seattle Police Department. And so 12 and 13, and I'm just was watching the dash cam video of this and could not believe how young these kids are. And look, I agree that we have to, and our criminal justice system has to treat a 12-year-old different than a 30-year-old. I understand that. But here you've got a situation, they have a gun, obviously shouldn't have guns. They've threatened more than one person with that gun. They've fired shots into the air. They led police on a chase at one point at more than 80 miles an hour. I think the only reason the chase ended is they ran the car into something and the car was disabled. They get out on foot, police have to chase them. These are young people but are committing very dangerous adult crimes. They have to be in a secure facility. The idea that in Dow Constantine's, you know, perfect universe that they would, oh, no, we'll just have them in this little, like, you know, daycare center. And we'll talk to them about why firing, holding people at gunpoint is wrong. We have to look at the crime first, make sure that the community is protected from that individual. And then we can focus on getting them the help they need to turn their lives around. And frankly, we should be doing that with a 12-year-old just like we should be doing it with a 30-year-old. But by the time they've committed the crime, we have to make sure that people are safe from them. And of course, the best area where we need more focus is to prevent a 12 and a 13-year-old from committing crimes like this in the first place. Some of that, I am confident, has to do with parenting, obviously, in this case. And there's only so much the government can do in that realm. But yeah, there needs to be programs to make sure, I think, when you've got lower income families, for instance, I think there's more of a propensity to engage in criminal behavior. And so you have to try to identify households where there could be issues and see what you can do. It's a societal good to have some sort of intervention there. But you're not doing that. You always say that. We need to, you know, we need to help these kids. It's like, yeah, we all agree. Like, let's make sure that they don't get to the point where they're holding up individuals at gunpoint. But you've been saying that for decades and you haven't done anything about it. And the problem is worse than it's ever been. And what, we've had the same King County executive for 16 years. I don't know. Maybe it's time for someone new. And it's certainly not time given this climate. The fact that Dow Constantine is even still entertaining in that interview with Chris Daniels, the idea of closing down the youth jail is unfreaking believable. These are people who shouldn't be in charge. They shouldn't be in charge of a convenience store, let alone a whole county. Wild stuff. All right. Before we get to the President's Day poll that came out, it is President's Day, so I think it's perfectly appropriate to talk about this President's Day poll where historians were asked to kind of, I guess, rank the worst presidents to the best presidents. And we'll talk about where Donald Trump and where President Joe Biden fell on that list. But first, we were talking to our friend Zach Abraham on Thursday's show about some of the economic indicators out there. For instance, there's a lot of big companies that are laying people off. Amazon, UPS, REI, Nike, Microsoft. So when you think about that in these places like the tech sector, where you know they've had all this overwhelming growth, and when they're doing well, the economy's doing well. What does it signal for the economy when you have these layoffs coming? Because at the same time, you see stock market's doing great, but all these big companies are laying people off. So he says that it's really important. That's another reason why it's important to look at those other indicators, not just the stock market, to decide how the economy is faring.
People go, well, it's a really strong economy, and you look at them and go, well, you're pumping $2.1 trillion into it a year, yeah. Right? So your definition of a strong economy isn't mine, right? You're looking at a four-banger, four-cylinder engine that they hooked up a nitrous oxide tank to, right, and pumped out 800 horsepower, and you guys all act like a miracle has happened, and now we're looking at a Chevy big block V8. No. It's a four-banger on nitrous oxide, right? You pull that out of there, and it's going to decelerate. A lot of this, the vast majority of this economic strength is purely narrative and printed money.
Yeah. And it's really important given, again, when you have stuff that's the result of printed money that's being propped up, maybe it's because it's an election year, you might be led to believe that, oh, my retirement portfolio is just doing fine. The economy is great. The stock market's great. When that's not the case. And if you're not managing your risk right now, when that comes crashing down, when that fake world that they have built up comes crashing down and you've ignored, or whoever's managing your portfolio has ignored all these other indicators like the layoffs that are happening, that puts your retirement at risk. We only get one retirement. Protecting it, I can't think of anything more important than protecting your retirement. So I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. Their review is a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. And you can just have a phone conversation with them. There's no obligation to sign up. In fact, they don't even let people sign up after their first meeting. So schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, dipping outside Washington State, it is President's Day. So there was a University of Houston poll that looked at, asked presidential historians, et cetera, all best and worst presidents. You want to guess, Nicole, where Trump is on the list? Just, I don't know.
I'm going to go dead last.
I'm going to go dead last. Let's see. This is from University of Houston. New survey of scholars finds, finds Lincoln remains America's greatest president. FDR passes Washington for number two, and Biden is in the top 15. That's the thing that really, like,
that is just,
I'm okay with you putting Trump last, although I think that things like this with history, I don't think it's fair to look at a modern president through the same lens as someone like Lincoln, because their legacy hasn't withstood the test of time yet. And sometimes how a president is viewed in modern day is very different than how a president is viewed in 50 years or 100 years. So I almost think that when you do these, you kind of have to eliminate like the last four presidents at least, and then just look historically, because then you have some time for their legacy. Like, I don't think Bush's legacy is the same looking back even today as it was during his presidency and stuff like that. But I had to laugh at, like, in what world? These are scholars? These are scholars for who? It says Biden enters the ranking. So this is the first time that he's been part of this ranking. He enters the ranking at 14 behind Barack Obama, who's at 7, behind Bill Clinton, who's at 12, but ahead of, this is who Biden's ahead of, Ronald Reagan. Lord, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
I also, I pointed this
out to you, but they asked them who should go on Mount Rushmore next.
Yeah.
And one of the, I think the third favorite was John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
But then later on it says that John F. Kennedy, what was it?
Was one of the most overrated presidents.
One of the most overrated, yeah.
So these scholars think he's overrated, but they're also like, let's carve him into a rock.
Yeah.
It's the Ronald Reagan. It's Joe Biden ahead of Ronald Reagan that is really just... Well, grinding my gears.
They say he's good because he came after Trump. That was one of the reasons for Biden being up so high, is because it looked good coming in after Trump.
Something tells me what? All these scholars are from Harvard.
Yeah.
These are Harvard scholars. Right. That sounds about right. But I was curious, maybe we have some comments, because I asked you guys, what's your favorite president? I mean, everyone knows my favorite president is Ulysses S. Grant. I know that some history and a little podcast Nicole listens to is not too kind to Ulysses S. Grant.
Well, no, he's very influential. I think that once people get to know him, or I mean, he did have a drinking problem and some, like, he had some demons,
yes,
right?
Yes, but he became the president regardless.
I know.
He worked through his demons while he still drank.
Well, but. No, he still was dealing with those demons. I think he was a very good general, and that's why you love him.
I do, but I also love that he never wanted to be president.
Yes.
Like, Lincoln was very scared that Ulysses S. Grant's, you know, fame was on the rise because of the mm-hmm. war, and that he would want to run against him. And Ulysses mm-hmm. was like, no, I don't want to be president. Are you crazy? And then Lincoln died. And so it was like, I love that he didn't want the job. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, he did remain an alcoholic. So,
and he shares my birthday.
Well, then that's all we need
to know,
right?
That's the only famous person I've got.
Sorry, my nose itches.
Well, you've been having lots of issues this morning.
It's either allergies. Sorry, guys, my nose itches. I've got to itch it. Nicole won't take me off camera to itch it.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. It is what it is.
I really can't.
So we talked last week about just the predictable but also ridiculous coverage of the Super Bowl parade shooting. Where, of course, you know, you've got a shooting, and I think all the media's like, oh, it must be some unhinged white Trump supporter who hates Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. But, of course, it became clear pretty quickly that this was maybe some sort of gang-related beef, a beef between groups of people. And then the media's like, oh, well, it's not a big deal anymore. You know, and if it had been a white shooter, he would have been identified and all his pictures all over and named. But there's not even a lot of mainstream outlets who have put the names of these people out there, and they're saying it's because they're minors. You really think that if there was a school shooting, as there have been, and it was some white guy with an AR-15, that you wouldn't be naming them? So anyway, I thought maybe, okay, let's get through the cloud of crazy that is coverage of mass shootings, and maybe we'll emerge next week and the coverage will be better. Well, it's not. The coverage is worse, because now what the media needs to do is it needs to find other ways not to focus on the root problem. Right? Oh, we can't focus on, you know, young black men or gang violence and all this stuff. It has to be about guns. So how are we going to get creative about making this about guns and not talking about this issue or naming, you know, the black juveniles? So this AP story, this is actually more creative than I could have even imagined when I thought how the media would cover this. AP, gun rights are expansive in Missouri, where shooting at Chiefs Super Bowl celebration took place. You guys. It says, a pro-gun state, Missouri has some of the most expansive gun rights among states as a result of a series of measures passed by the Republican-led legislature over the past few decades. Oh, now we gotta blame the gang shooting on Republicans. Before the GOP won full control of the legislature in the 2002 elections, oh, now we gotta go back to 2002, concealed weapons were outlawed and handguns could be purchased only after a background check and permit from local sheriffs. Republican lawmakers repealed those restrictions within their first decade of power, and gun shops saw rising sales, none of which has anything to do with a couple black juveniles shooting at each other at a Super Bowl parade. Even though Missouri has less strict gun control laws than other states in the country, it is against federal law for a minor to possess a handgun. Period. Doesn't matter where you are. And so it's very clear that these minors didn't have those guns legally, and it's against the law to shoot someone with a gun who didn't, if it's not an act of self-defense. So now this has to be about not, why are these young men shooting at each other? Like, let's look into their backgrounds and try to get to the bottom of that and the crime issues in Kansas City. Oh, nope, this is about what the Republican majority in the legislature has done going back to 2002 and it being a pro-gun state. Even more unhinged than I expected. And then there's the CNN. And this, you know, at least they, so CNN's headline, Kansas City shooting may have stemmed from personal dispute, police say, two juveniles detained. But here's the quote that really gets to me. And I think we as a country on both sides have to change how we talk about these things, if we're willing to, and we actually care about solving these things. It says, the shooting appears to have been a dispute between several people that ended in gunfire, Graves said, noting there is no indication of a, quote, nexus to terrorism or homegrown violent extremism. As if that makes it worse. As if it being a couple juveniles who have such a disregard for human life that they'll shoot at each other and shoot into a crowd full of innocent people, that's not just as bad as if it had been a shooting with a tie to terrorism or homegrown violent extremism. I realize there are different implications there, but one of those types of crimes is killing far more people in this country than terrorism or than homegrown violent extremism. Gang violence is killing far more people. So why is it somehow not taken as seriously? And I would also say, for the police chief to say no indication that it's homegrown violent extremism, is that not homegrown violent extremism? How are these kids gang members with guns? How is that not considered homegrown violent extremism? Because they're not white, they don't have an AR-15? They're not some right-wing faction like the Proud Boys? Which, that's homegrown violent extremism, but it's not homegrown violent extremism to be killing people on the streets, shooting wildly into crowds full of people because it's between a personal dispute. And by personal dispute, what, drugs, gangs, what is it? So it's the way in which we look at and put loss of life on a different plane depending on who perpetrates it, what their political ideology or motivation is. Death is death. Mass shootings are mass shootings. We have to treat every single one of them seriously. We have to look at the root causes of all of them, regardless of skin color or motivation. That's the only way that we reduce the loss of life. And the media is not helping in driving these conversations to the place that they need to go. I mean, the AP, oh, it's because this is a pro-gun state. No, they had guns illegally. It doesn't matter. It could have been a state with the strictest gun laws in the country. Like Washington State has some of the strictest. We still have more shootings happening than we've ever had here happening before. Unreal. It's truly unreal. I don't know where to go from there. I don't know why the media insists on having these and driving these absolutely divisive narratives that don't lead to problem solving. And I'm actually going to talk about the media here before we get to questions and comments, because we're going to talk, I think, more about this on the show tomorrow, but I just wanted to poll our subscribers on it today. Nicole, can you actually put up the Ari Hoffman tweet first? So my friend Ari Hoffman, who's on his way back from Israel, he tweeted out this poll that Donata, which does a lot of public policy polling, has been sending out to some people. And I'll just read the question where it started with. It says, sometimes over the course of a survey, people change their minds. Provided next is a ballot, is ballot language for an initiative that may appear on your local ballot this November. It reads, if enacted, this measure would establish a program to provide public funding to local news outlets to protect and expand local news coverage, fact-checking, and coverage to underserved areas and communities allocated by residents in a transparent and independent process. It would expedite the release of public information to residents and media and increase government transparency in news media. It would be funded by a 10-year property tax levy with $20 million, approximately 3 cents per $1,000 of assessed value, collected in 2025. Having heard this description, would you vote yes to enact this initiative or no to repeal it? And as Ari Hoffman points out, this is something that's been talked about before in Seattle. You know the democracy voucher program that they have in Seattle? So essentially it would be like a media voucher that you're paying for through a tax levy. And then that money will be disseminated to help media outlets stay alive and like fact check. So we'll get to my thoughts on this in a moment. I'm sure Nicole has some too. But I asked this of our subscribers on Patreon, Locals and X today. Would you support a 10-year property tax levy at that rate to fund local journalism? yes or no. I haven't looked at the poll results yet. And I really hope that you guys haven't absolutely lost your minds. Oh, 100% of people on Patreon right now say no. 100% of people who've taken this. Harold says, oh, good Lord, no. As if local journalists, present company and Jonathan Cho excluded, weren't beholden enough to local politicians, this would absolutely kill the last vestiges of independence. This is the one case where I am in favor of abortion. Please kill this idea before it breathes its first breath. Wow, that turned dark. Sometimes it's better if I read comments. Let me see if you guys had anything to say on
it's like electing the sheriff.
This is wild. Now, on X, 20% of subscribers are saying yes. Mm-hmm. Right in Edmonds, Denise Cooper says, no, I would not support a levy to support local news as there is too much bias news, one-sided politics, and untruths, unfortunately. A lot of commenters said that they would prefer to just, if they choose to support an outlet, to give that money directly to the outlet, like you guys who support our show.
Because then they get to decide who is media, who's the legitimate media.
Right, and who's doing, like, we just talked about that Seattle Times coverage that was just factually wrong. And I'll read a couple more comments on locals before we dive into how we feel. But Bob writes on locals, more tax dollars is not the answer to our journalism problems. I agree. Dan says government is already funding half the media. We have laws about government not creating propaganda, but they've been forgotten. They just use public safety as the excuse for propaganda. Weisscastle says, for a government that refuses to recognize Jonathan Cho as a journalist, a big fat effing no. 100% agree. This kind of stuff scares the heck out of me. Because as Ori Hoffman pointed out in his tweet, they're not going to fund it in a fair way.
No.
You really think that we would see a dime? And I wouldn't want it, by the way. You really think that they're going to help give that money to people challenging the prevailing narrative, like Jonathan Cho, like Ari Hoffman, like me? You really think that when they say that money is going to be spent on improving fact-checking, who's going to be doing the fact-checking?
Right, who'd you hire for that
job? We're talking about media outlets that won't even just call a spade and say Inslee's lying about gas prices when his own office indicates he's lying about gas prices. So I'm sorry, no, I don't want some government-funded fact-checking. And then that other part of it where they say, because this is the one thing where I as a journalist can say, you know, maybe that needs more money, although I don't support this at all. I want to be clear. It says expedite the release of public information to residents in the media. I mean, I'm in the middle of a public records lawsuit because the city of Seattle took months to respond to a very basic public records request. One of the excuses they're giving is, oh, we had an open position. And so like, but I don't trust, well, I don't believe them. That's why we're suing them. But also, I don't trust you to, when you are withholding, in my opinion, public records based on whether those records are going to be good or bad for the politicians in power. You think that if we give you more money, all of a sudden everybody's PDRs are going to be responded to in a timely manner? Not a chance in hell.
Nope.
This is a terrible, terrible idea. I wouldn't want a dime of that money. Again, not that it's going to go to me. But no, they're going to give this to the Crosscuts.
Oh, yeah.
To the progressive entities. Yeah. The only government or the only media entity I am okay with getting government funds is TVW. Right. It's the only one. And that is an exception because TVW just broadcasts meetings, video of what's happening. It is a public service to have TVW streaming the votes, streaming the committee hearings. That's the only one that I truly believe provides an unbiased public service to everyone. Everyone else, hell to the no. And also, well, this is like got me just fired up today. Also, this doesn't teach them any lessons.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It is like it's King County giving their vote for sheriff to Dow Constantine. You're giving away the power, right? Because right now all those media outlets have to answer to is who's going to watch. So, you know, King 5 might have gone a bit woke. They ended up seeing that reflected in their ratings. So then they've kind of been straying back to their old ways lately. And that's all we have is listening to the listener, listening to the viewer, listening to the people. But if they now have to please a government official or a government group or whatever it is, now they've got this extra element of, well, before we do that, maybe we should think about that. And that's already
an issue. That money?
It's one of the reasons you left TV news is because there was already this, well, we need to think about this and we need to think about that, and not just, we need to get this information out there. We need to, and, you know, in a way that the people are supporting. So, no, it's a terrible idea. And King County giving, like, giving their vote to the Dow. That's just insane.
It's
insanity.
And you say that it's going to be allocated by residents in a transparent and independent process. There is no panel, no universe, no anything where bias doesn't exist. It doesn't, even with like the Washington Coalition for Open Government, which I support the work that they're doing. We've had them on the show fighting back against public records lawsuits, but they also didn't stand up for Jonathan Cho when he was physically blocked from attending press conferences. And so that tells me a bias there, right? Everyone has bias. Everyone has bias about the media. I wouldn't even want this to be handed out with a right-leaning bias. Mm-hmm. So this is a terrible idea. So if this is something that starts to manifest, because this seems like it's just testing the waters
for public policy. That's what's scary to me, though, because they're testing the waters because they have some inkling that this could work. If they throw the word fake news out there and say this is to defeat fake news, then they can find the support for it. And that is what's scary to me, is they're just slowly seeing how far they can go and taking control.
And the biggest freaking liars here are Democrats, because they're the only ones in power. Mm-hmm. They lie left and right. You really think, I don't even know why Democrats would want this. Like, more fact checking? We can't have that. Not in this election year. But one more point I just want to make, what I was saying earlier, is if you're failing as a media entity, there's a reason you're failing. Mm-hmm. There is a reason you're failing. And maybe it is from a business perspective, you need to reevaluate how you're bringing revenue in. But propping them up does not address the underlying reason why ratings are down for a lot of TV stations, why readership is down, etc. People are going elsewhere, like Undivided, for their information. There's a reason that people are willing to pay us $5 a month. And there's a reason why we can at least make enough money for Nicole and I to do this full time. Now, if our revenue starts to decline dramatically, we would take a hard look at what we might be doing to attribute to that. Now, it could be for economic reasons, there could be a little bit of that, but if our coverage and what we're doing isn't of value to people anymore, we have to look internally about why that is, not rely on the government to prop us up while we continue to do shit work.
Wow.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I forget that that's a swear word. You know, I really do. Anyway, so it's not teaching the media any lessons. The media has to, I firmly believe, be completely destroyed in its current form and then be built back up from nothing. That's the only way it's going to be fixed. It's too far gone. Too far gone. Okay, questions and comments from the live stream. This summer super chat's from last week, right? We just didn't get to it. Summer Zhao says, $4.99 super chat, lived in Seattle over a decade, moved to Texas after the pandemic because I can't stand schools in King County anymore.
Because she had commented about how it was there, and you said, where do you live?
Yeah. Brandon Robillard with a $2 super chat, boop button fund. Boop.
You didn't boop today. They were very...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Very thrown off by that. We were talking. That's the truth.
Boop. Yeah, we were talking. She was playing that, and I had a question for her, and so she muted me, and it was behind the scenes. Anyway. Boop. Hearings. John Sheridan says, Dem legislators in Olympia only care about their pet projects and are negligent serving Washington residents at large. Yes. But fine. Just own it. That's all I ask. I ask for you to actually own what you want and why you want these things. Hey, if you want billions of dollars in revenue because you want, you know, to electrify the ferry fleet and give grants out to improve bike lanes, just own it, say it, and then let the voters decide on whether it's worth the impact it's having on them. Is that really so much to ask? Jerry says, it's their way of saying, you little people don't know what you're talking about, so just sit down and shut up. Precisely. Mm-hmm. On our Cliff Mass interview, Tracy says, what a great Sundays with subscribers. Cliff Mass is amazing. His voice sounds a lot like Mike Rowe. It does.
It does. I hadn't thought of that.
I thought that same thing while I was listening to it.
Yeah.
Similar no-nonsense attitude too. Yeah, we had a lot of requests to get Cliff Mass on the show, and so we were glad to have him on. Kim Taylor says, and they wonder why newspapers are dying. Right, with the Seattle Times. And if you go, sometimes I'll read Seattle Times comments, and it's not a bunch of progressives. Like, there's a lot of people on there complaining about Times coverage, et cetera. And so, yeah, I mean, if you're not doing good work, if you're doing blatantly biased work, you're going to lose a segment of your readership. I'm not saying you have to acquiesce to them. I mean, I've lost subscribers for being hard on Trump. I've lost subscribers for being hard on other Republicans, who I'm not even naming on the show today because I'm over it. And I've lost moderate Democrats, too, for focusing too much on, you know, they'll send me a message, I'm canceling because of this reason. And look, I'm always going to say what I believe. And Nicole and I've had conversations too about like, this is going to cost us some subscribers or whatever it is. And you do have to, it's not like I'm not going to weigh those things because we are a business, right? Like we need to be able to survive. But at the end of the day, like if I have to lose some subscribers for saying something I believe in or something that's true, more so something that's true, then that just is what it is. Okay, on Dow Constantine and his whole like youth detention grift. Leah, I'm not sure I blame Dow Constantine. He's just doing what his voters wanted. I don't even think that it's all the voters in King County. I think it's a small faction of the extreme left that rallies everyone up. I mean, he literally gives in to terrorists because these are the same people who lit construction trailers on fire at the youth jail during CHOP without any knowledge of whether people were inside those construction trailers, could have killed people. And then he's like given in to what they want.
I also think that, I mean, as he's pointing out, he can't do it. So he says he's going to do something and then, I guess we can't do that
can't
yet.
Can't do it, of course.
Oh, we'll put it off this many years and then maybe I'll be done and then it doesn't
happen. And then he'll be done and people will forget about it.
But he said what people wanted to hear.
Just giving in.
Some people.
Giving in to terrorists. Genuinely terrorists. Mm-hmm. On youth violence, Greg Oleka says, see, we said it 20 years ago, Grand Theft Auto was going to make kids bad. That video looks like Grand Theft Auto.
It really does.
It looks like Grand Theft Auto.
Yep.
Wild. Matthew Cook with a $2 super chat. Look, bro. So Matthew Cook, I don't even know if I can say this on the air. So Matthew Cook, one of our great subscribers, had an interaction with Dow Constantine at a bar and went up to Dow Constantine and very politely, this is Matt's version of events, which I believe Matt, like was asking him about the property tax lid increase that he wants. And like Dow Constantine, like, look, bro. He gave him a look, bro.
A look, bro.
Bro, what are you talking about? Yikes. Shocking. You saw Dow Constantine at a bar. Real shock of the century there. CP says, my heart goes out to these young boys. They need to be held accountable, but they are so, so young. Yeah, it's really, it's tough. GTBD00 Guma Go Jojo Jack with a $9.99 super chat for the swear jar. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to do that. And I do think I've been better. let me see.
You have been one more. You have been a lot better. I mean, it hasn't happened for quite a while.
Thank you.
But we do have to pick a charity.
We do. We're working on it. I got all the nominations in. Yep. And so we picked our charity around the end of February last year, too. So I think that's just fine. People are kind of charitied out the first couple months of the year because they all gave... They were trying to get those tax write-offs in December, so it's we got a little time before the charities really kick up in earnest. Let me see here. Susie with a $20 super chat. Great show today. Happy President's Day. Thank you. Oh, and then all the whiners in the comment.
Wow. Let Nicole have the day off.
I know.
Free Nicole. Hashtag free Nicole. No.
I already gave Nicole a list of holidays that we will be taking off.
Not many.
Which ones? Now we're going to do this. The show is 20 minutes late. Which holidays do you not have off this year that you want off?
No, I'm fine with it.
No, go ahead, Nicole.
No, I'm fine with it. I've agreed to the list. That's all I'm going to say.
Listen, I'm a very casual boss. I have no limits on vacation time. What, as long as Daryl can come, we technically only work 4 days a week.
We're fine.
I really appreciate
everybody looking out for me, though.
See, somebody on the Sunday show is like, Brandy, sometimes you're mean to Nicole. Yeah. I was like, we've been I said, you didn't sound excited about the 2024 election cycle. And I said, you better get jazzed or I'm going to replace you.
Sarcasm is not.
Oh no, people are very defensive of you.
Yes, I know.
We've been friends for like a decade.
I know.
If I can't be sarcastic with Nicole, who can I be? Yeah, but it's like, man, I can step out of line. All the subscribers put me in line on Sundays. You're mean to Nicole.
Look, and now she's making me go 20 minutes over.
First of all, You don't want to know why the show was late today?
Yeah, it's actually.
Nicole forgot her computer charger at home and had to go back and get it.
It's all my fault. And I think I labeled, and just for Chris Daniels, I labeled his video King, and it's Como, where he works these days. So, you know. That's what happens when you are working the holidays. Your mind's on holiday.
It is. Okay, let's just get to our closing sanity check, shall we?
I suppose.
So we've talked about how policies have consequences, and if you're a honest public servant who wants to do the most good for the most amount of people, and a policy you supported had unintended consequences, then you're going to reevaluate that policy. That's the bottom line. We talked about how Uber and rideshare drivers in Seattle say they're actually being hurt by a policy that Seattle politicians said was intended to help them, that would increase their hourly take-home pay. And in response to that, Uber, for instance, added this fee. And so Uber drivers are like, fewer people are booking our services because it's too expensive because of this fee. So now you have some Uber drivers who are making half what they were making before this policy went into place. Again, a policy that was supposed to help them make more money. And you've had very few individuals who supported that policy back away from it, which, again, that's not public. That's not being a public servant if you can't admit when you were wrong. And now we're realizing King 5 covered this. It's not just the Uber drivers who are being hurt, it's also the businesses that rely on these rideshare drivers for stuff like Uber Eats. The headline, Seattle pizzeria owner says new gig ordinance is slicing sales. And I mean, don't get me wrong, even before, because I've been known to order a late night pizza before Eastside Weight Loss.
I was going to say, not recent.
Prior to. But it's like, all of a sudden you put a pizza in your cart, you're like, boop, pizza. One pizza. Oh, that pizza's like $17. Great. And then you check out and it's like $64. You're like, whoa, what happened there? But now that's getting back, like, oh my gosh, it's getting even worse.
Oh yeah.
Because now you have these added fees to help the Uber drivers make more money. But the result is now that closing price is way too high. And people are just saying, never mind.
Yep.
So you have the Uber drivers making less money. You have small businesses and restaurants making less money. The only people who are making more money is probably the government. And they do this to, in their words, help people like the Uber drivers, and it's actually hurting them. So that's insanity. That is the definition of insanity. And until we put actual public servants in office, things like this are going to continue to happen. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided on this President's Day. Thank you for being here on a holiday. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Thanks to all of you who were defending my honor on social media over the weekend. That's all I'm going to say about that. We'll be back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.